Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim, and I'm a team filling in for Qasim today. And our guest today is Will Berry. So Will, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Hey everybody, my name is Will Berry. I'm the founder of Guys Cosmetics here in Los Angeles, California.
Awesome. So can you tell us more about Guys Cosmetics and exactly what you do, and then also just how you got the idea to start this company?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hit a big rewind. So right now I am 29 years old. I left college in 2017 and went into the programmatic advertising industry. For those of you who aren't familiar with programmatic ads, when you go to a website or you turn on your TV, there's a pretty good chance that if you're not on Facebook or Google, that ad is actually being shown to you via an auction that happens in fractions of a second. So I spent the first 4 years of my career working in data analytics in that kind of world, learning a lot about advertising, marketing funnels, consumer acquisition. And then a year later, I found myself at Procter & Gamble, helping them navigate this kind of technology, how to use it, and how to use data to make their ads more effective. About 18 months ago, I had the realization that I was really interested in becoming an entrepreneur. And I started to think about industries that I was really interested in. Skincare has always been really, really close to me. As you guys can see in this podcast, I kind of have this reddish skin, this rosacea. It's something that I've always been very self-conscious about. And 10 years ago, it was something that nobody talked about, men's skincare. Now it's very normalized. And men's cosmetics, men's makeup is something that's just starting to grow that I'm very confident in the future of, and decided to build a brand around it. So I'm about 1 year now, full-time working on the brand. Yesterday, we announced we're opening pre-orders for our first product and could not be more excited.
That's amazing. Congratulations. And I think it's good timing to have this discussion. You know, it's just opening up for pre-orders. I think it's a big milestone. You know, it's a big milestone for sure. So can you just, you know, tell us, I guess, what makes your brand better than your competition, or what makes your brand unique?
Yeah, I'd sort of answer that in two different ways. One is sort of the consumer-oriented answer, and one is the business-oriented answer. Maybe the business side, the dryer first. To launch a brand, you have to be good at two things. One, you need to be able to make a great product. And two, you need to understand consumer acquisition. I would venture to say that most people who are starting beauty brands and personal care brands come from the world of product. They understand makeup or skincare very well and have to learn about consumer acquisition. My model is very flipped. I think I come to the table with probably the more difficult part in my pocket. I understand how to run ads, and makeup is a very, very new thing to me. So I'm learning along the way. The more consumer-oriented answer that I still think is equally true is that we're building some first-of-their-kind products. So we are building a color-correcting stick for men with redness, something that will be first-of-its-kind to market, a color corrector. And then we're building one more product that I'm not quite ready to talk about, but we are revolutionizing what makeup could be if it were sculpted and created in a way that an everyday guy might want to put it in their briefcase on a day-to-day basis.
Awesome. So in terms of making this product, were you able to find chemists that you work with? Like, how did you create this perfect formula to make this product?
Yeah, great question. I'd love to say there was some genius insight that I had, but it started with a lot of kind of just gritty cold calling. About a year ago, I was spending most of my free time running through a spreadsheet, calling people saying, hey, I have an idea for these two or three products. Can you help me bring them to life? It all sort of culminated last year. I went to Las Vegas for North America's biggest beauty convention, totally by myself. And, you know, I was walking around and 50% of the people kind of just raised their eyebrows. Like, what is this one guy walking around by himself doing here? He clearly doesn't know what he's talking about. And another 50% of people who are like, wow, men's cosmetics, this isn't really something that's being talked about yet, or not openly enough. Through those conventions and some very, very lucky phone calls and some pitching, managed to find three different manufacturers that are bringing this all together for me.
Awesome. So can you talk more about those ingredients? Like, what ingredients are being used to make this product top notch?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would actually say it's more so to do with the lack of certain ingredients. there are a handful of other players right now in the men's cosmetic space. I think most of them are leaning very heavily into the branding, masculinity. How do we separate ourselves from a voice perspective? There's a little bit less attention to cleanliness and formulation. So all of our formulas, 100% of our formulas will at least be Sephora clean, clean at Sephora. Meaning they will be just as pristine of formulations as anything that you buy to Sephora. And a subset of our products will also be Credo Clean, which is the gold standard for formulation right now within the cosmetics industry. So we pay a lot of attention to potential endocrine disruptors, nasty preservatives that are sort of legacies of an old age of beauty when these things weren't really talked about. I defer a lot of these decisions to our chemists who sort of keep me involved and make sure I can continue to make these claims, but everything is super clean, and that's something I'm proud of.
Awesome. So I guess my question is, because as a guy, this is something that, just like based on our discussion so far, like this is something that like every guy needs to have, or at least many guys need to understand, you know, skincare and beauty care for men. So how do you go about this brand awareness? I think that like people just, especially I think most guys aren't aware that it's something that they actually need and that something like this exists.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've used the phrase men's makeup a couple times already in our quick conversation. That gets a very jarring response when I talk to men, if I'm out at a bar or out of the sports game or in the shopping market. And so maybe I should clarify a little bit more about the kinds of things we're making. I don't think the everyday guy wants to wear a face full of foundation or a huge amount of concealer. I don't. But I think there's a lot of room for products like the color corrector that I mentioned, or something like a tinted moisturizer. These products that sort of blur the line between cosmetics and skincare, little quick fixes that help cover up a pimple or a rash and just help you feel confident in your own skin.
So I guess, like, just more so, I guess, like, how are you going to like the word, like you mentioned, you know, word of mouth, talking to people? Are you running marketing campaigns, going to conventions? Like, how are you telling people that you even exist?
Yeah, great question. When I got started about a year ago, I had this very wide vision of what our go-to-market strategy was going to look like. We're going to talk to influencers. We're going to be doing Google ads. We're going to be running, you know, a lot of programmatic on the open web. We're going to do Facebook. We're going to do affiliate marketing. Right now, it's just me. This is a bootstrap brand. I've retained 100% of equity in the company, which I'm really excited about. But that also means that I need to be very, very careful about my bandwidth. Very intentionally, right now, we're only running paid ads. We will consider also affiliate. We will also consider influencer down the road, but seeing a lot of traction very early with paid media, and planning to stick to it for the near future.
Awesome. So in terms of paid ads, can you just talk more about that? Like, what channels are you using? It's like Facebook, Instagram, Google ads. Like, where have you seen the best ROI for your advertising dollars?
Yeah, there's no question right now. Facebook is still the king of e-commerce direct-to-consumer performance-oriented marketing. If you were to sort of create tiers of different channels based on performance, I think Facebook still sits on its own. Below that, you hear a lot of people talk about TikTok is beginning to grow. Google is terrific as well. I hear more and more about Pinterest for a certain subset of brands, but that's very specific to particular categories. The shorter answer is Facebook is king, but there's a lot of avenues that are still working for a lot of brands.
When it comes to Facebook, do you, like, is it Facebook specifically or more so Instagram? Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I should totally clarify. By Facebook, I mean the overall umbrella of all of Facebook's entities. So most of our ads will be on Instagram, some to Facebook as well. One very interesting insight that we've had launching a men's beauty brand is when I was sort of creating customer segmentation in the early days, we're trying to think about what my target customer was going to be. I had this idea of coastal, progressive, young, wealthy. That's immediately what came to mind. As I've begun to run, as we've begun to run more and more ads, I've quickly learned that older men are very, very interested in these products. They're not as willing to talk about it openly, clearly, but a lot of men with money in their 40s, 50s, as they're starting to see their skin age and they're moving on to another stage of life, that's become a very, very, very effective route for advertising.
So can you talk more about, I'm just curious, because obviously you mentioned earlier that you're in Los Angeles, which is, you know, so you said coastal. It's something that I think is a fashion mecca. Like, there's no doubt. Like, LA is LA, right? So do you feel like being in LA helps you at all in terms of getting like the word out, you know, reaching more people about your brand?
Yes. I would admit, as a founder, I probably haven't taken full full advantage of the resources that that Los Angeles offers from a go-to-market perspective. I would say to any young personal care founders out there who are just getting started in this, being outside New York or outside of LA, or in most manufacturing happens outside of those two cities. So I think in the early days, the most important relationship that you're going to have outside of relationship with your customers is going to be with your manufacturers. So long run, I probably won't set up shop in LA as we scale, but in the early days, as we're bringing these products together, being around my manufacturers has been really helpful.
Awesome. So I'm just curious, like, what would you say is the role of technology when it comes to your business?
Everything. I am a technology first founder. I think if I have a bad habit, it's that I tend to spend too much time sitting in my dashboards, sitting in Excel reports, and trying to overanalyze everything. Everything from our go-to-market strategy, which I already talked about, to all of our analytics, our email campaigns, our customer segmentation. Most of this is me sitting behind a few monitors in my apartment these days. We are definitely a digitally native brand, and that's our forte.
Makes sense. So in terms of technology, are you utilizing AI at all in your tech stack? And if not, what do you think the AI can help you with in the future?
Yeah, I've used it, I would say. I've experimented some with some of these sort of bleeding edge tools, Midjourney for some of our creative development, GPT for some copywriting tasks. I think it's a helpful tool, but it's not an end-all be-all quite yet for an e-commerce brand. I would say the most day-to-day use that I have with those kinds of tools is brainstorming. You know, if I'm hitting a brick wall, say, hey, give me 10 ideas on a route that I could run, something fresh, new, a new angle that I can be having with my kind of customers. Yeah, despite us being extremely technology heavy, I would not say that generative AI is a huge part of our day-to-day, though.
Do you feel like AI, for example, may not now, but eventually, you know, can it help provide information? So a potential customer might land like on your website and they can talk to a high-level AI bot and say, hey, you know, what is this all about? How can I, you know, what is this kind of like, what ingredients are in here? Why should I use it? Like, what's the value this is going to add to my life? And like having those types of conversations.
That's a huge potential use case. And that's not one that we're having quite yet. Again, we're just in the pre-order days, but that is something I'm hearing more and more of. The most resource intensive aspect to scaling a brand, at least in the early days, let's say sub $5 million in annual revenue, is customer service. You talk to some of the biggest e-commerce founders of the last 5-10 years. I was listening to Moiz Ali on a podcast a few days ago. He said that his first 6 hires were all customer support. That's the kind of thing that I think you're 1,000,000% right on. Like that's going to help potentially me, but certainly founders in the future. If you can cut that down to 1 or 2 hires and the rest going out to a generative AI tool, that would be a huge, huge help.
100%. And I think that most people, like the reason why they wouldn't buy is because they don't have the information. And once they understand like what you're telling me and how it's going to improve their lives, and they have no reason not to buy. It's like, I think that's more of what it is. Like they need to understand the value it's going to add to their lives and how it's going to make their lives better.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. One of the biggest hurdles for us is education. It's hard as a small brand. It's one thing going into skincare now, which is relatively saturated. 10 years ago, if you asked the average guy on the street what an exfoliator is, I bet 5% of them knew. Now it's probably more like 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 2. We're facing that same kind of battle. So always looking for new ways to sort of help men understand what is a concealer? What's a color corrector? What is a tinted moisturizer? That kind of stuff.
100%. So in terms of, you know, future vision, are you focused more on D2C or, you know, being in certain retailers? And if you want to be in certain retailers, like what are some retailers where you could really love to see your product?
Yeah, I am 100% committed to direct to consumer, at least for the short run. I think that our natural advantage is going to be in our ad analytics. And the moment that as soon as I concede my customer data to a retailer, we lose a lot of our advantage, not to say the margin that we lose as well. So short run, the next 2-3 years, I think we'll be 100% direct to consumer. There's a very good chance that we go into Amazon. So I'm not sure where you'd consider that, but Amazon, Shopify would be the only two places I could see us in the next couple of years.
In terms of data, does Amazon take that data? Is that a concern for you as well? Because you mentioned data is kind of more of an issue, right?
Yep, exactly. Shopify is the focus for exactly that reason. Amazon is a very, very low-hanging fruit to most people who are building brands. So it's the one that sort of tempts me away. But retaining data through my own Shopify shop is the priority.
Yeah, I think it's strange because you have a lot of people when it comes to e-com that for whatever reason, they only tend to buy from Amazon. It's like this kind of like habit that they have and this loyalty that people have to Amazon. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, to be frank, I am that consumer. So on a day-to-day basis, I try to think about in our ad campaigns, how can we speak in unique ways? How can we provide incremental value to buy through our shop rather than going to somebody else? I am absolutely that guy who new pair of tennis shoes, pull out the Amazon app and it's on its way.
Sense. So you mentioned that your concern with retailers obviously is the customer data, all these things. Mm-hmm. But do you think that eventually you're going to end up going into retail? Like, do you see that, you know, maybe going into Walgreens or CVS or places like that?
I think it's possible. To be frank, the two or three brands in our space that I've seen do it have struggled. It's worked very well as an awareness play, as a secondary marketing channel. You know, if you walk into a CVS and you see a men's concealer on the shelf, it adds a lot of legitimacy to the brand and to the category as a whole. But from an economic standpoint, I'm significantly less interested in retailers for now.
100%. And it's funny because, you know, as we always talk, we work with the e-commerce brands. We, you know, e-commerce, the numbers are showing up by 2040, 95% of transactions we have being on e-commerce. But I think when it comes to retail, at least for me, like that version of e-commerce is more of like DoorDash. Oh, I need some more product. Go to Walgreens to pick it up for me. And that's it.
Yeah. No, 1,000,000%. And then we get into a bit of like, what is the definition of e-commerce? If I buy something through an app and then go pick it up, is that being bought digitally? Is that correct? Count as DTC? It all gets blurry, but totally.
100%. So what would you say is your top priority in the next 3 to 6 months?
It's twofold. Number one, yeah, consumer acquisition and making sure that our product rocks. It's number two. Right now, we just reached $1,000 in accrued revenue, something I'm really excited about. But the other part of this is we're going to send out our V1 of this product in January. How do we make it as kick-ass as possible? And how do we create feedback loops with our customers to make sure that we're iterating and getting better and better over time? So in no way is it we release in January and then we move on to the next thing. I want to make sure that we're getting that feedback from our customers and making sure these products rock.
100%. So what'd you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started this company?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's something, again, my wheelhouse is the digital side. Beauty and building products is something completely new to me. And it's a lengthy process. I would say if there's anybody out there who's thinking about jumping in, the first thing that you probably should be doing even before you jump full time is create those relationships with those manufacturers and see if you can bring together an MVP as quickly as possible, especially if you're sourcing overseas, especially if you're trying to do a super, super clean formula like what we're doing. These are really, really lengthy processes. So see if you can bring together something simple in the early days, bring it to market. That would probably be my advice.
Have you raised money at all or not yet?
Not yet. There's a chance that I will do a round late next year once I feel like I've proven product market fit. I'm very fortunate in that I'm able to bootstrap this. My second job out of college was at a company at the trade desk, which is this, it was effectively a startup when I joined, now hovering between a $30 and $50 billion market cap. So it was enough of an exit for me to be able to bootstrap and chase a dream, not enough for me to buy a yacht and sail off into the sunset. So for now, retaining my equity, long run, I may need some nitrous for marketing, I've been saying to my friends.
So if we're going to have this conversation again in 1 year from now, where do you expect things to go for your business?
Yeah, we have a goal of across these two products, first 12 months of $400,000 in revenue in our first year. From there, I'd love to expand into more of a skincare focused line, as well as three or four more cosmetics focused line. Yeah, there's a chance that we push through that round as well. For now, you know, the vision is very much in the short run. I'm enjoying the day to day. I'm enjoying the pressure of getting this thing off the ground. And it's really encouraging to see just in the past couple of days that we're getting some traction.
So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out, do you mind sharing your website or social media handles? you know, just best way to find your company.
Totally. So you can reach us at guysmen.com. Guys is G-U-I-S-E. I love that name. I think it's clever, but audio is probably the worst channel possible to have to explain it. G-U-I-S-E-M-E-N.com, guysmen. You can also reach me on Twitter. I just got on there in January and enjoying it very much. X these days. I believe my handle is at itswillberry, B-A-R-R-Y.
Awesome. Well, Will, thank you so much for your time. We're rooting for you. Hopefully we can chat again in 1 year from now as your company keeps growing and expanding.
I'd love that, Dan. We'll do the before and after.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. Thanks. Bye.
See you guys.